What is up, Level Up Nation, and welcome to episode 134 of the Level Up Podcast, your home for gaming and esports news, brought to you by the Overtime Network. My name is John, and I am joined once again by the man, the myth, the legend himself, the soon-to-be Grandmaster in Overwatch, the King of the Courtside, Joey. What's up, buddy?
John, I'm doing well. I'm not going to lie, though. I am still exhausted from our E3 episode last week.
That was a long episode. That was two amazing hours breaking down E3.
And it's the episode that just keeps giving. I'm still editing that beast as well.
See, I didn't realize our editor was out last week. So when you were like, oh, yeah, I'm still editing it, I was like, oh, poor Joey. You poor thing.
Yeah, I mean, I hope you guys enjoyed the episode. I think between all of it, we probably put a good 8 to 10 hours between watching conferences, putting notes together, editing this beast. So it's out there in the wild, usually one of our most popular episodes. We hope this year's no different.
All right, Nation, make sure to follow the show on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. You can find all the show there on those platforms at the Level Up Podcast. That's at the LVLUP Podcast. And while you're on Twitter and Instagram, why not give us a follow as well? Follow us at Courtside King for Joey and at Fiasco for myself. If you are joining us here, Joey, it's been a long weekend, if you couldn't tell. I had another wedding. I'm still recovering from all the alcohol and everything. It has been a fantastic weekend. I've got no sleep. So we're going to try to do this. If you are watching live on Twitch, that is right here on twitch.tv/OTN_live. You can find those usernames right below those beautiful mugshots you're staring at. If you're listening to the podcast later on down the road, they'll be in the show notes for you below. Nation, as we've said, we are still recovering somewhat from our E3 recap episode. Again, two long hours, but I feel like we're ready to take on this challenge. And I feel like we're ready to talk gaming and esports news once again, including, Joey, we have a Season 7 champion for the Rocket League Championship Series World Championship crowned this weekend. But that's only one topic this week. What else are we talking about this week on episode 134?
We have a few roster moves coming in from all over esports, as well as a new Twitch acquisition. In addition to that, a little bit more E3 follow-up after we've got some news from some of these conferences coming out as a supplement to really what they gave us last week in their huge announcements. In addition to that, John, we have some other news as far as new esport leagues coming up, as well as some old ones with some new changes coming in.
All right, sir. So we have our topics. We know what's coming up. We know the challenge ahead, Joey. So I feel like it is time for that time-honored tradition passed down from generation to generation. Of course, I am always talking about the drink of choice, the assistance that we need to get through this episode. Joey, for the 134th time, your beverage, please.
Some Angel's Envy bourbon tonight, John.
Ooh, look at you. Have we had that before?
We have. Okay. It's amazing.
I can't remember, unfortunately, especially after Saturday. There wasn't much remembering of anything. Joey, while I firmly believe in exercise and I firmly believe that, you know, to ensure one's body is up and functioning at its highest level of performance so you can video game at the highest level possible, you have to exercise those muscles. You have to exercise those organs. So I exercised my liver quite well this weekend. So I'm going to go ahead and give it a down day today on Monday. And I am just going to go with the classic sweet tea. Sweet tea. Ooh. There is no alcohol in here, believe it or not, which is a first. Well, it feels like a first, but really, I think this might be my only fourth time that I haven't had alcohol on the show.
Fourth? I don't know about that.
No, third?
It's been at least
second?
A handful. Yeah, no.
Four is a handful.
I feel like you've gotten sick each year and had to do tea once or twice, at least
Pardon
every year.
Pardon me for being sick. Joey, by the way, if you're watching live on Twitch, Joey, that is a beautiful jersey that you're wearing right now. That is a beautiful esport jersey. Is that an ARC Washington Justice jersey?
It is, John. So, guys, we are sporting the new Washington Justice third kits that will be debuted over in Atlanta as well. I'm super excited for that, John. I think this is going to be a really good third kit for a lot of the teams out there. The Justice one in particular looks very clean, though.
It is sharp. I love the black on black look. I like the pinstripe. Kind of reminds me a little bit of what DC United's home jersey is a little bit with their horizontal stripes. So shout out to Washington Justice for putting together an amazing third jersey. Really a shout out to I would argue most of the teams that did come out with a third jersey for Overwatch. Like They all looked incredibly sharp. There are a few ones that I was like, yeah, it could have been a little bit better. But the Florida Mayhem with their Miami Vice kind of color in there was freaking fantastic. If I had the spare money, I may have bought one, but instead I will also rock the Washington Justice third jersey. And I can't wait to rock it down in Atlanta as well when we watch the Atlanta home weekend. Homestand weekend. Mm-hmm. I almost said homestead. I'm like, I know it's not homestead. Joey, enough about our jerseys. Enough about our upcoming travels. It is time to get right into gaming and esports news. Let's go.
John, let's kick things off by sticking with the Florida Mayhem. There is nothing like some sun showers down in Florida as the Mayhem adds support player Rain into the mix. This is a big move for them. He's coming from Overwatch Contenders Korea from O2 Blast. Is it what the Florida Mayhem need to really turn around their season more than anything? They've been toward the bottom of the table really all season long. They've not been able to climb the standings table very far at all. Can they do it here in Stage 3 with this new acquisition?
They could, but then if you're also like some of our members in our OTN community Discord, you believe supports don't matter. I'm talking about you, Clue, slash Prophet, or whatever name you want to go by this week. Yeah, I mean, look, support players can as much crap as they get, support players can really make a huge difference, especially in team fights, especially in the current GOATS meta. So this could be a nice spark for the Florida Mayhem. I thought I said Miami Mayhem. Florida Mayhem going forward. Is it the spark to get them out of the basement? No, but it's a step in the right direction. I do like this signing, and the Mayhem fans should be incredibly excited for this. He is a very talented support player, and you should start seeing some positive steps forward here in the upcoming weeks. Coming to the end, I believe, of Stage 3, correct? Stage 3?
I believe it is the end of Stage 3. Yeah. Yeah, I think it'll start out as a bit of pitter-patter here and there as he kind of charges up and gets used to the team. It's going to take a little while for him to envelop himself and for the team to get used to his style. We've seen it with our own Washington Justice with Ark and Sleepy as well. It does take time for a team to adjust to new support players, new tank players, new DPS. It really doesn't make a difference. Any new player is going to require some adjustment. I do think bringing in a Contenders player as opposed to an Overwatch League player is a good move, though. You're bringing someone up new into the scene, someone that may not have been discovered by other teams yet, or other teams have been sleeping on him. This is bringing someone in. You're not having to trade another player away to get him. You're not having to spend a ton of money to do it either, just because he is coming up from Contender. So I think this is a really smart move from the Mayhem. Moving to League of Legends, in particular the LEC, Rogue has added N-Rated as the new head coach for their Ultra Liga team. That is their academy team. I want to say the Ultra Liga takes place in Spain. Don't quote me on that one. I want to say that's where it's based out of, though. But either way, this is Rogue showing, hey, we are invested in this. We had a rough spring split. It was very rough for Rogue, but they're showing they're ready to continue investing. They're ready to bring up new talent. They brought up some young talent from their academy team into the LEC roster this time, now putting a coach down there to continue to harness that youth talent as well. Sticking with League of Legends, we have jungler Condi being banned for 18 months. John, why is he being banned? Well, yeah, he's an idiot. That's why.
Oh, why?
He's also had his contract with LGD Gaming terminated as he was found in a major LPL match-fixing scandal. This seems to happen here and there in esports. It seems to happen here and there in sports as well. I hate it. I think it's dumb. It really destroys the integrity of the title in the game. Now it's happening in the LPL here. He's not the only one involved, though. As most of these scandals, there are more people. LGD's manager did not hesitate to bet on these games that he should not have, and he's been permanently banned from any League of Legends esports events as he allegedly attempted to blackmail Condi into match fixing as well. In addition to that, Academy players FDY and Intruder will be banned for 10 months, too. So a lot of bans coming out here, 3 players and a manager slash coach. It's what needed to happen overall. At the same point, a lot of these guys, the careers in esports are so young, and you and I have hit on this before. We have people show up drunk to matches. We've had match fixing in the past. We've had racist comments. When it comes down to it, esports has such a small career. It's 5 to 6 years for most of these guys, maybe 10 at most. A lot of these careers get slammed by stuff like this.
Yeah, and when we talk about match fixing, League of Legends really isn't a name that is one of the first ones on the tip of your tongue when you talk match fixing. Generally, you're talking about a first-person shooter. You're talking about aimbots. You're talking about some other form of cheating other than straight-up match fixing. It's really kind of a surprise to see this in the LPL. it's a really respected, highly competitive division, and it's just shocking that it happened in League of Legends. Like, I know I shouldn't be shocked because it is something that esports has dealt with from time to time, but the fact that I guess it happened in pro League of Legends in the LPL, I think that's the biggest shocking thing here, is that it didn't happen, you know, down in South America. It didn't happen in Brazil. It didn't happen in Australia. It didn't happen in the Oceania region. It happened in a major player in the LPL. So that's really the biggest shock here. And an 18-month ban. Okay, so he's getting a year and a half ban, which is good. Let's take a look at match fixing in the history of competition. You think of the whole Black Sox scandal with the Chicago White Sox. A lot of those players were banned for life. When you take a look at someone even like a Pete Rose for the Cincinnati Reds, who was never found guilty of match fixing, just betting on his own team, they assumed that he was match fixing, and he's been banned from baseball ever since. Here, you're getting an 18-month ban. So really, in comparison to established traditional sports, it's a slap on the wrist. It's a year and a half. The manager permanently banned, I think that's the right move. The manager definitely had a role in this. But with the players, Joey, like you said, they have such a short career. We can't keep just giving them that slap on the hand. Yeah, a year and a half is still a long time in the pro scene because, like you said, most careers are right around 5 to 7 years if you're lucky. So you're losing a year and a half of eligibility, essentially, that you're going to fall behind the competition. But at the end of the day, you have to make an example, especially if you're an established esport league like Professional League of Legends, like the LPL. You need to make sure that nobody else even has the gall to want to do this in the future. 18 months, I think, is decent. I would have wanted longer to send a really strong and clear message.
Well, in this article, at least, doesn't define it, but I believe it's a ban from League of Legends as well. We're talking not just from the pro scene, but from playing League on your account as well. Obviously, you can make other accounts, you can switch IPs here and there, but it does sound like it is a game ban in general, not just an esports ban.
Yeah, well, we'll have to see what happens. An example is like even when Tyler won, granted, he's not a pro player, but he's a pro streamer. When he was banned, he was still able to, you know, watch League of Legends. He was, you know, I'm pretty sure he had alt accounts that he just didn't stream on, because every time he would stream, it would be instantly banned. So there's ways around it, but from a professional level, you can't use those accounts that Riot has fully unlocked for you. All the skins, all the champions and everything, all the other bonus stuff that you get for being a professional player. So those accounts are going to be locked until further notice. So I guess that's fine, but for me, the ban from pro scene, the ban from the game is decent. There is ways around the ban from the scene. I still wanted something a little bit stronger here, but I think 18 months, I think that's a decent middle ground.
Yeah, I think it's all right as well, because we really don't 100% know all the details behind the ban. It sounds like Condi placed a bet on an LGD game during the NEST tournament previously. We don't know what team he bet on, so it could have been LGD, it could have been the other team. It sounds like after placing the bet, he provided information to others and assisted others in actions that undermined the fairness of the competition, according to Riot. So we don't really know what the betting looked like, who he spoke to, and all this kind of stuff, how much the manager coerced him into this. So there are so many details out there that are not really publicly known at this point. So that might be why we're seeing an 18-month ban as opposed to something lighter, or as opposed to something much heavier as well. Moving on, let's go CSGO. We have Body moving on from G2 Esports, as well as Fnatic adding Yuray to their Clash Royale roster. John, I don't know about you, but I actually forgot Clash Royale still had an esports league.
Yeah, Clash Royale, I'm surprised it's still even a functioning mobile game.
That thing makes mad money.
I know it does, but the problem is, as someone who struggles to get involved into mobile gaming, for mobile games to keep my attention is a really big struggle. Now, congratulations, mobile gaming world. There is currently a game that I am fairly addicted to that I know I'm going to be logging on at least several times a day. So kudos to the new Harry Potter mobile game, which I think we discussed that on the show. And from the description in the articles and from the previews we were reading, it sounded like a pretty awful game. But so far, it's been pretty amazing. The graphics are a lot better than I thought they would. So far, kudos to the Harry Potter Wizards Unite game. But yeah, when it comes to Clash Royale, though, Nope. I downloaded it once, played it once, thought it was dumb, deleted it. The pro scene, Joey, we've talked about it time and time again. Absolute train wreck. So when I saw these on the show notes today that we're going to be talking about Clash Royale again on a pro level, I kind of giggled a little bit. I will not recreate what that the giggle sounded like.
Please, for us here.
No, it's not going to happen. I'm sorry, sir. But it was interesting because, I mean, there really isn't that much fandom around the pro scene. It's mainly just among the mobile gamers. The pro scene struggles. It's a terrible broadcast. It's not entertaining. It's very lackluster in everything that it does. So Fnatic adding players, a player to the roster, okay, cool, that's great. It's still a really crappy product overall when you put it in the larger scale of esports. So I guess this is great for Fnatic, but I am still kind of curious, how much longer is Fnatic going to keep supporting a Clash Royale esport team when it's just, I don't see it as being viable. I don't see it as being something that's going to bring money in.
Yeah, I really don't see this as a long-lasting move either, to be completely honest. I mean, if anything, you want to go on something of this scale, I think Rocket League is even like a step above, and I feel like a lot of these teams that might be investing in something like a mobile game should move over to Rocket League before it gets even bigger. That's just my personal investment information, knowledge. It's no kind of insider trading or anything here. I don't know 100% the numbers, but if you just look at the facts, Rocket League is now bought by Epic Games. Yes, Epic has shown they're terrible with esports, but I think Rocket League and now bringing in Nate Nancer is going to bring enough experience to the table. I would buy into Rocket League now while it's still cheap because I think it's going to be very expensive here shortly. Partnerships. We have Twitch acquiring esports-focused social platform Bebo for a rumored $25 million. This has been confirmed, and the deal includes Bebo's staff of 10 people and its IP. Another big win for Twitch here, and they actually outbid, I believe it was Discord, who ended second in the bidding phase. Discord trying to expand as well, but Twitch and Amazon, with all that money being backed, all of that esports real power, in a sense, as far as the market goes, they ended up winning this one out. So Twitch now adds Bebo and that staff of 10. I think this is a good move. I really don't 100% know what it's going to translate to, whether it's going to be Bebo working on the Twitch team now, or if Twitch is going to expand to a social platform where they're not just about video and streaming, but they have a bit more social network focus to them as well. Really not 100% sure, but it is an expensive deal, $25 million going away from Twitch to buy this one.
So fun fact about Bebo. Let's turn back the clock a little bit. Bebo, in 2007, yeah, we're talking 12 years ago, and shout out to, let's see, which article am I using for this one? This is, let's see here, Fortune Magazine. Bebo overtook MySpace as the number one social media website in the UK back in 2007. This company was founded in 2005 out of Silicon Valley near San Francisco. So even from the small get-go that they had, I believe it was actually a husband and wife team that created Bebo back in 2005, really took social media by storm to beat out the Goliath that was MySpace. And that was all before, Facebook was open to anyone outside of college and everything, too. So the Facebook community was fairly small as well. So that's a huge accomplishment for Bebo. And now, being purchased by Twitch is a major accomplishment for that company going forward, and a testament to what they did from the get-go back in 2005.
Now, let's also talk, they have fallen from grace, though, too, in a sense. So, I mean, you look at the original investment, it was bought for $25 million, but then AOL paid $850 million to acquire it, $850 million, and then it fell short and got sold for $25 million, and then it fell short and sold for $25 million here. So it's really kind of leveled out in a sense. It's had tons of potential as it was growing. I believe it looks like 2008 is when the AOL purchase was. So a lot of hope in this company, and it just kind of has not really capitalized. And here we are in 2019, and it's still selling for $25 million. So there's money there. $25 million is no amount to scoff at. But when you're originally estimated and valued at $850 million, there is some still to be desired. I guess Amazon and Twitch think they can capitalize on that and hopefully bring its valuation back up. Okay, John, a little E3 follow-up. I know we had a lot of E3 last week, so we're not going to spend too much time on this one. We do have some numbers in, though. Microsoft's 2019 briefing was E3's most watched stream on Twitch. Yes, you can say, hey, Sony wasn't there, but it is Microsoft's third year in a row with Sony there, the previous two. They ended up with 1.1 5 million viewers on Twitch alone. And the biggest thing for that, for me, John, and this accomplishment in general, and these last 3 years, Microsoft has been pushing Mixer, at least for the last two. They've been giving away goodie bags and different free games if you watch on Mixer. So the fact that they're still dominating the audience on Twitch is also a big, real revelation to the gaming industry, the fact that Microsoft is still that powerful, even giving away free stuff on another platform. Gosh, my throat is not doing well tonight. So that's super impressive. Those are big numbers. Obviously, Sony not being there, these numbers could have looked differently. But again, 3 years in a row, not too bad for Microsoft. Xbox Game Studios Obsidian Entertainment has given some insight into their numbers as well. They now have a staff count of close to 200 people, with approximately 75 of the staff working on their next title, The Outer Worlds. This is one we've seen, I believe it was Game of the Year at this year's E3 for most people expecting it to be the greatest game coming out through the end of this year. Outer Worlds looks good. It kind of looks like Fallout meets Mass Effect, sort of. A very Fallout spacey type of game. But only 75 of those 200 staff working on it. So that also means 125 people are working toward one of these Xbox titles that is still yet to be announced. A lot of those coming out. I believe this puts us at, I want to say it's number 5 or 6 that we have confirmed as far as other titles being worked on in the Xbox Game Studios that we have heard nothing about yet. Last but not least, for the Xbox follow-up from E3, we have Gears of War 5 making a statement. And John, I'm very curious to get your feedback on this one. There's going to be no season passes, no gear packs or loot boxes. All DLC maps will be free. You're going to have exclusive earnable content in a new Tour of Duty system. I don't really quite understand the mode, but I believe it's going to be like the objectives that Fortnite has in its Battle Pass. There'll be daily, weekly, and monthly objectives, where you can get exclusive stuff for playing through them and completing them. And then in addition to that, all store purchases are direct. No RNG involved. We're talking League of Legends status. If you see a skin, you want a skin, you buy that skin directly.
So you're telling me we're going back to when video games were released as complete games and added content was just a side bonus that was given to you and you didn't have to pay a premium for a 50% completed game and have the next 50% shoved out to you in the next 8 years, or, you know, in 4 year increments with DLC content that you have to pay an additional $30 to $50 for to get. And they call it an expansion pack for approximately 15% more content than the original base game. And then you have all the other loot boxes and your season passes where the more you play the game, the more cool stuff you can get. Are you saying that we are finally going back to completed games where you earn what you earn, you buy what you buy, and that's pretty much it? I like it. I love it. I want more of it, damn it. I don't play Gears of War that often. I don't play, a lot of Xbox games. You know, I don't really play on Xbox, period. But this is what gaming was about. You play a game because you enjoy the game. It shouldn't be a grind. Playing games is something you do to pass time, to have fun with your friends. You know, the idea of, you know, loot boxes and DLCs that you have to pay extra money for because the game was shipped out incomplete because, you know, they just want to get the game out there as fast as possible to try to make money and get more money off of it. Season passes, well, yeah, it's cool to feel like you're earning something. You know, you can still do that by playing the game without having to pay extra money for that content. You know, okay, when you achieve 1,000 kills in Horde mode, you get X unlocked. That's how you do it. Not have to pay, you know, $14.99 for the season pass, and then and only then, you get 1,000 kills, then you unlock it. It shouldn't be that way. You're already paying a premium for the game. Games are $60, $70, and upwards of $80 for the base titles, even more if you want the special editions that give you other cool things along with it. And they nickel and dime you. And in all honesty, you know, Fortnite is a great example of nickel and dime. It's a free game, and thus you can justify spending money on it because you didn't buy the base game. Well, that's opened up a new issue also, just to segue just a little bit. But when you take a look at the Fortnite community and the amount of online bullying that comes from people not having certain skins or, you know, not having that lucky RNG from like opening up a loot crate for something to get a limited or rare skin, or maybe a family can't afford to drop $100 a week for their kid to buy 3 skins on Fortnite. It feels like
$100 a week.
Whoa! When you the average skin on Fortnite is $20, so if you want 5 skins, that's $100. I know plenty of people that will, you know, I've talked to some parents along the way. You know, when I see a kid doing a Fortnite dance, sometimes I'll go up to the parent and say, hey, you know, I'll introduce myself to the podcast and everything that we're doing, and ask them, you know, just for research, how much do you spend on this game for your kid to buy skins and other that have nothing to do with the game? They don't make you play any better. They don't change the game whatsoever for you, other than how your character looks, you know. And parents have responded with, oh, $10, $20. I've heard of upwards of close to $50 to $70 a week or every other week. And I'm sitting there going, like, that is absolutely absurd. $60, $50 is what a base game normally costs. And you're spending like 1,000 times that on a weekly basis. You know, you do $20 a month, a week. That's 4 weeks in a month. That's $80 a month times 12. You're paying close to $1,000 a year for a free game. That's why I like what Gears of War is doing here. Everything's included. You buy what you want to buy. You earn what you want to earn without having to spend any additional money from the base game. That's what gaming used to be like. That's what gaming should be like. And we should hold producers and developers to that standard. Stop nickel and diming the gaming community. Gears of War 5 has it right here. I am incredibly happy to see that the old school mentality of gaming, complete games being shipped, free DLC, no more loot boxes, no more season passes. So excited to see that's finally making a comeback.
And it's something that works, and we've seen this before. Like, yes, you can argue the loot box mentality has worked here and there in certain areas. Personally, I think Overwatch has probably not made... they've made a lot of money, relatively speaking. But as far as overall, I think something like a League of Legends pulls in so much more money because players know exactly what they're getting. They're buying RP and they can buy the exact skin. For you to get a May skin you want, you have to buy 10, 20, 30 loot boxes or play a ton of games to get it. And who knows if you even get it then. Or you can save up the little bit of currency that they give you every like 5 or 6 loot boxes.
They never give you enough currency, ever.
Yeah, I feel like loot boxes are not the way to go. You can also argue the Fortnite model does work. I mean, Epic Games has more money than they know what to do with right now. So battle passes can work in free games. But when you're doing a $60 game, I think it makes much more sense to go with this route. Allow players to get what they want, whether it be that gun skin they want to spend $2 to $5 on or whatever it's going to cost, whether it be that character skin, allow them to figure it out. Heck, I would even do horde skins if I were them. On your horde mode, let them change the locusts and give them funny looking chicken heads or something. Like, there's so many different skin packs or environment packs you can add in. Heck, even add a snow map, a spring map, like different areas that you just switch the skin of. Like, there's just so much endless possibility, but allow the players to decide what they want. Then you can look at the sales. Hey, is this selling? Is this not selling? Do players really want this? Then you can adjust your content by that. Where's the money coming in? What do players actually want? I feel like this is them showing, hey, we're listening to players. We heard that throughout the whole Xbox E3 conference and briefing. They kept saying it over and over. We want you to play the games you want, where you want, when you want. This, to me, continues that mentality with Xbox Game Studios buying in as well, giving with the players what they want.
Well, here, I'm going to ask you a question, Joey.
Uh-huh.
So while I agree, like, in a free game like Fortnite, a battle pass does work, and we talk about how, like, a battle pass can become really grindy. You know, you spend a lot of time just trying to level up that battle pass before the season ends. You know, the games back in the early 2000s, I would even argue into the 90s for the 90 kids out there, you know, you unlocked things by playing the game also. So there's still that grind mentality. You know, they had in-game achievements. We still have achievements today. Steam, Xbox, PlayStation. I don't know a single platform that doesn't have achievements already built into it. When you do certain things in the game, you unlocked certain things in the game. So you replayed those games. The issue with a lot of games currently in the 21st century, there is no replay value. There is no want to go out and collect all the achievements, to unlock all the achievements on your Xbox or on your Steam account or anything else for a particular game. There's a very small handful of people that like to do it. But other than that, there's no purpose of doing it.
Right.
So instead of charging for a battle pass, how about we go back to that? Make your games replayable. Say, hey, speed test it. If you can beat the game in X amount of time, you can unlock this mode or you can unlock all these skins. If you get, you know, GoldenEye 007, get all your kills with slappers only, let's go. You unlock paintball mode or something. You know, cool things like that make the game replayable. not battle passes. Battle passes start to feel like a chore because you have to get it done in an X amount of time. And let's be real here. Joey, how many games do you play on a weekly basis? 20, 30, 40? No, you probably play a handful of games and you stick to those handful of games. It's really hard to rotate new games in, even if they have a battle pass. How many Rocket League battle passes have I bought? How many times have I grinded it all the way to the end? Zero. Why? League of Legends, Overwatch, everything else that I'm playing. It's just too much. The developers don't care because they've already got your money.
Right, and it's shown hundreds and hundreds of times that the Battle Pass model works, and that's the real big issue here. And when you look at it, I think certain games can use it and certain games cannot. If I'm paying $60 up front, I do not want to see a Battle Pass anywhere near that game. But if I'm playing a game for free like a Fortnite, I'm totally fine with a Battle Pass, especially if they're changing the map, giving me new weapons, and continuing to change up what we're seeing there as well. I think it gives more value. And if you look at Fortnite, it has been around and popular for so freaking long. And I think a lot of that is because of these map changes and because of the Battle Pass. It's keeping people engaged. It's obviously making Epic plenty of money because they keep doing it over and over. That to me is the big seller here. And when you look at other games, if you just allow them to unlock modes in a free game, the developer's not going to make enough money to really continue it going unless they're getting tons and tons of streamers involved. And really, it's going to be so hard to do that. So at least for free games, I think it makes sense. Maybe even $15 under games, battle passes can do it. But again, it's got to be a popular game and it's got to be enough to keep it fresh. Like, I don't think every type of game could do a battle pass. They wouldn't have enough people. But like a Rocket League, a Fortnite, stuff like that, I think it works. But as players, we also have to decide what games do we really want to engage with and what games is it worth us buying a battle pass in as well. ESPN has announced a professional Apex event to be held at the X Games in Minneapolis from August 2nd through the 3rd, marking the return of esports to the X Games after a three-year absence. We're not going to dive too much into this one, John, but I think it is big for esports that it's back at the X Games. Again, not quite the venue I would go with personally. The X Games, I don't really think esports at. I think more stuff like skating, dirt bikes, different like, I don't know. I don't really know the type of sport you would do them. Like motocross type of sports, I feel like are more present there. And really like stuff like a snowboarding goes well at X. Like, I don't know. What do you call that genre of sport?
Extreme game. It's extreme. Extreme.
Yeah. That's what it stands for, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's right.
X Games, extreme games.
So yeah, maybe esports is extreme. Personally, I don't find it that extreme. I don't feel like this is the greatest venue for it. At the same point, I think this does open it up to more events, whether it be the Olympics, whether it be creating its own Olympics, whether it be some bigger stage international events down the road. I think stuff like this doesn't really hurt. More publicity never hurts in a sense. At the same point, I don't know if this is going to be the big views to viewership that the X Games is looking for or that esports is looking for either.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting because I feel like probably one of the biggest factors here in ESPN bringing esports back to the X Games is the sponsors that they both share. Red Bull, Monster, both are incredibly big in the X Games and with ESPN, and both are incredibly huge in professional video games, in esports. So that alone right there, to me, tells me that Red Bull and Monster are both kind of pushing ESPN to do this. We've seen ESPN's interest in esports grow over the last 5 years to the point where they have their own esports division now. That alone right there shows you that, one, ESPN is interested in it. The X Games, you know, they did it before. It wasn't too terribly bad. And they share those common sponsors. So really, it makes sense why they would bring it back. But I agree, it doesn't really match up with the idea of, you know, motocross or skateboarding, you know the half pipe competition or the Winter X Games with snowboarding or anything else like that. So, it's interesting.
Moving with the sports esports theme here, we have after a strong second year, the NHL is looking to fully commit into esports. It's been a talk for a couple years. They started teasing it out with a few NHL organizations this past year. We actually casted the Capitals tournament for their NHL really introduction to the esports or the Capitals esports face-off. So it's exciting. I think it's really good that we're seeing more sports dive into esports. And I think the NHL is honestly doing it the right way. They've watched, they've seen how many viewers they can pull in with it. They've watched other leagues like the NBA 2K League, for example, and learned what they do well and what they maybe don't do so well and how they can adapt their own league to that. So taking that into account, as well as NHL viewership numbers as well, the NHL Gaming World Championship viewership numbers were up 190.3% this year. They had 632,907 tune in for the 2019 finals. That is up from 218,038 in 2018's finals. John, I have to think part of this is due to us casting that wonderful Washington Capitals event.
I would have to agree. That was a fantastic casting gig. But no, I mean, in all honesty, it really, in some way, did play a role. I'm not going to say our casting did, but what the Washington Capitals did. 22 teams independently from the NHL, with no direction from the New York offices at all, held their own esport tournament. And yeah, Joey, you know, we were graced with the opportunity to cast the Capitals Esports Face Off, their initial in-house esport tournament, and the Chell Classic with the Washington Capitals and the Tampa Bay Lightning. So, you know, that just goes to show you how in 1 year the esports scene for hockey has grown incredibly. And it's an international audience too, which is really the sweet spot here. A lot of European viewers and gamers are really interested in a professional hockey esports scene put on by what everyone considers is the best hockey league in the world, and that is the National Hockey League here in North America. It'd be crazy not to do something with this. The interest is so there. Hockey speaks to the younger generations. It's an interesting game. It's different. It's not like football. It's not like soccer. It's not like baseball. And, you know, there's so many different elements that go into hockey, and it's so fast paced. It's you're able to grab the attention of the younger generation, something that a lot of people seem to be struggling to do. Esports is able to capture the minds of the younger generations. Hockey can do that too. It would be crazy for the NHL not to take this step, to not try to make an esport league. Because I'm sorry, the NBA 2K League, that does not do sports simulated esport leagues justice. The NBA 2K League is a great example of how not to do things. The viewership isn't there. FIFA is probably the golden standard, and I feel like the NHL is using the FIFA model to really attract the viewers. The finals alone, 632,907 viewers. Joey, you could probably add up all the viewers the NBA 2K League gets in one season and still not reach that mark.
Well, there are a few key factors to mention here. And again, I agree, different things could be done for the NBA 2K League for sure. But we have to look at the international appeal of both these brands as well. You could argue the NBA is very strong over in China, but when you look at other countries, it's not as big as a soccer or a hockey, especially in the northern area of the hemisphere, really. So I think that's a big impact here, especially the Swedens, the Norways, the Denmark. All of those viewers are definitely going to tune in for something hockey. A lot of the pros even come from those countries, Russia, Canada as well. So there's a lot more appeal to hockey and to FIFA in general. So I think using a hybrid of the two models is the way to go. Another thing we've seen in hockey, and this is also along with FIFA, is it's not really a MyPro simulated type of thing. It's more you're using a team in particular, whether it be international, whether it be club, it really doesn't matter. You're using a full team as one player or as a couple players in some of these leagues. They do duos or trios. Now, when you look at the NBA 2K League, we're talking five players each playing one player. I think that is a lot of the reason this is all ending up this way as well. It's a lot easier to follow something like a FIFA or something like an NHL where you're watching one player control a team or a couple players as opposed to five different players playing. And honestly, NBA 2K, and we've talked about this before, it does feel a bit slower paced than we'd like for a sports game as well. FIFA, yes, you can argue soccer in general is slow paced, but FIFA doesn't feel that slow paced. Same with NHL. It feels very back and forth. You can really make your way down the field or the ice very quickly. The basketball, yeah, there's fast breaks here and there, but it feels a bit more sluggish when you're playing it out, especially with 10 different people controlling at the same time. There's a lot more communication that needs to be pulled into effect. You really don't see some of that fancy skill work as much. Like, some players can pull it off, but when you're FIFA controlling your own team, it's a lot easier to pull off that fancy cross because you know when the ball's coming and you know where it's going to. It's a lot harder playing with teammates in that sense. So I think that's one of the, I wouldn't say downfalls of the NBA 2K League, but it definitely complicates their advertising and marketing. The other thing is the fact that the NHL is allowing professional teams to advertise and cross-advertise their esports stuff. That is huge, and the NBA is so dumb for not taking advantage of that, in my opinion. If I already have these 30-plus teams out here that have huge marketability, why on earth would I not allow the esports team to market through them? yes, you might not, some people might be mad if you're showing electronic games on your sports channel, but at the same point, there might be that random viewer out there who didn't know there even was an esports league that would find their way into it because he likes basketball and the NBA 2K video game. That, to me, is so much lost marketability that the NBA is invested in. And really, I don't think you lose that many followers for doing this here and there. I think you gain more than you would lose. So for me, that's the big issue on that part. The NHL is doing a really good job of bringing these clubs in. The Capitals did their own tournament with the Capitals brand and name and Twitter and Instagram all over it. Same with the Tampa Bay Lightning. Same with the Anaheim Ducks. There's so many teams that ended up doing it. And I really think if you capitalize on the team brands that you've already built, these leagues do a lot more, and I think the NHL knows that up front.
Now, to prove Joey's point here, because I 150% agree. So that is a full 100% and an additional 50%, Joey, that I fully agree with you here. The Los Angeles Lakers Twitter has 7.7 million followers. Joey, without pulling Twitter up, how much less followers does Lakers Gaming of the NBA 2K League have?
Okay, what'd you say the original number was?
The original was 7.7 million followers for the NBA's Los Angeles Lakers.
I'm going to give them 10,000.
10,000? Joey, you have overshot by almost half. 5,977 followers of Lakers Gaming. That is like almost 7.3. It's even more. It's like 7.6.
Don't try to do math.
Math is difficult. Let me just put it to you this way. 6,000. I will round up. I will round up Lakers Gaming. 6,000 versus 7.7 million. That is why the NBA 2K League is not doing so hot. You cannot.
I'm telling you, one tweet from that Lakers account gains 10,000 viewers or 10,000 followers at the very least, in my opinion.
Yeah.
At the very least.
It's absurd. That they can't use their parent organization's social media accounts. Like, it just makes no sense. You know, and one last example real quick. Utah Jazz, and this is a unique case here. Utah Jazz have just under 1 million followers on their Twitter page. They have 921,000. I would argue they should have a lot more than that. But Jazz Gaming has almost 18,000 followers. So granted, the split is still massive. We're not talking Lakers. We're not talking, you know, almost 8 million in difference between the two. But still, it's just absolutely shocking that the idea of using your parent organization's social media already has that established community to promote an identity that is already tied to your NBA team makes zero sense. Zero freaking sense.
Well, and the key is that the NBA does not allow it. That is the real issue for me. Teams would love to do it. We know personally from multiple teams that they would love to cross promote these things, and they are just not allowed by the NBA league, at least to our understanding, to do this. And to me, I'm like, if I'm the NBA and I own both of these leagues, why in the hell would I not want to increase my funding, increase my viewership, increase what people are going to bring in by cross promoting with something we've already built? I don't understand from a league perspective. I am not the commissioner of either of these leagues, so I really don't have any say on it either. But at least from a marketing perspective, I feel like there's so much loss from both sides here.
Last example. A team that is struggling currently in the NBA 2K League, they are showing some resilience. They have been bouncing back. Our own Wizards District Gaming, their Twitter account has about 37,000 followers. So they have a decent social media presence, you know, going into their second year of existence. The Washington Wizards NBA Twitter page is 40,000 short of 1 million followers. 958,000.
Well, and I can tell you why Wizards District Gaming is so high. It's because Grant was so involved. Grant Parangipe, the director over there at the time, was very, very involved with the early stages of the NBA 2K League. He held tryout events and flew in from Las Vegas. We talked to one guy at the event because it was so well advertised. And Grant has a huge following as well on Twitter. So the fact that he had that following, I think, also moved some of those followers over. But with him being so outspoken with the league and really helping build it up from the ground up, At least from an organizational standpoint, I feel like that really helped the Wizards Twitter account to grow as well for Wizards District Gaming. But on top of that, unless you have a huge personality like a Grant, or someone who is willing to really go out there and build up a league from the ground up from an organizational perspective, you're going to end up with an account that looks like Los Angeles. It's just not going to be that big. You can also argue the Lakers, they came in season two. They weren't there for season one's hype. At the same point, you allow cross promotion in. I think this league gets a lot bigger. The NBA should really consider it for season three.
You get LeBron to do one radio advertisement one TV advertisement.
Or one tweet even.
Or one tweet, Joey. Just like you said, one tweet. That account is over 50,000 in like an hour. Guaranteed freaking teed. But they won't do it. It's a shame. And it really is affecting the NBA 2K League's ability to be a viable esport league. It hurts a lot in the long run. And it's really a shame for the first somewhat regionally based, because they do play their games in New York. But the teams are based in their home city. They fly to New York or take a bus or a train to New York every week. They just really miss the mark. And it's frustrating for those of us that like traditional sports and esports and want to see traditional sports make it as an esport league. It is frustrating that the NBA 2K League is that example that, you know, everyone's like comparing sports esports to now. It's frustrating. So hopefully the NHL can really dethrone, if we can even give the crown to the NBA 2K League. You know, I really want the NHL to create a league and really dethrone the NBA 2K League as the premier, if you will, only because of the only one regionally based sport esport league. And I feel like they can do it. And I feel like it's just a matter of time before they launch it.
Yeah, I think it's going to have huge success. I really like the moves the NHL is making. I love the fact they're watching the success that's already happened in FIFA and maybe the not so much success and the success that's happened in the NBA 2K League, watching what's good, what's bad, and moving from there. Additionally, we have Brendan Donahue, the commissioner of the NBA 2K League. And again, not spending too much time on this. They are focused on adding international teams next. So very much following in the footsteps of what we see with Overwatch League, with teams coming in from China, Europe, really Asia in general, bringing teams in. I like the fact that they're going this route with the NBA 2K League, but again, you need to allow professional teams to finally jump on here. Get your players to jump on here and market as well. Once you can cross-advertise, this league gets a lot bigger, and I think you expand into China for sure, because China loves them some NBA. I think that would be a really, really good move. But again, the biggest thing for me, the biggest bump here, not moving into China, but really expanding your branding and marketing already. We have Team Dignitas. They've opened up a gaming and media facility adjacent to the Prudential Center in New Jersey. Again, this is just another big facility we see opening up in esports. Team Dignitas, a legendary brand, now finding their way back into the LCS as well. I love the Dignitas brand. Not the biggest fan of their new owl-looking logo, but at the same point, this is a brand I like to see around, a brand I like to see grow, and I'm glad they now have their own center working here as well. Oh, this is a big one, John. Riot Games, they've announced the dates, cities, venues, and regional seating for the 2019 League of Legends World Championship. I did put a link in the notes here. Pull this big beast up. There's a few things to cover in here. We are kicking off with the play-in stage on Wednesday, the 2nd of October, and that's going to run through the 8th of October. Then from there, we're picking up with the group stage on October 12th, and that's going to run through the 15th. And then it's going to have a little break for a day in the 16th before we add the second part of that group stage, kicking off on the 17th and running through the 20th. Then from there, we make our way to the quarterfinals, which will be October 26th through the 27th, and the semifinals following the next weekend, November 2nd through the 3rd. And then John and I are going to fly to Paris for November, 10th?
Is that coming out
and
the
that's
going to
be for
budget?
The finals.
Is that coming out of the OTN budget?
We'll see how well Fnatic does. Then we can decide on that one.
Or how well Cloud9 does is the only NA team to ever do anything in Worlds.
Ayo. Play-in seeds. Just a couple things to touch on here for the play-in seeds. We do have the third seed from the LCK, LCS, and LEC appearing in the play-in stage, I believe. Top four will advance to the group stage. Yeah. So we do have some exciting stuff happening in the play-in stage this year as well. The group stage will be taking place in Berlin at the Verdi Music Hall. I think this is a good move, John, personally. The EU LCS, now the LEC, based out of Berlin. I think it's really good to capitalize on the crowd that you already have there for the live and studio audiences. Obviously expanded as more people fly into Berlin for the event as well, but why not go to a city that you've already really rooted the league scene in? I think it's a great move being in Berlin for that group stage. The quarterfinals are making the move to Spain. We've seen a few competitions out in Spain before. I believe one was in Barcelona last year where Fnatic did a pop-up stand. This one will be in Madrid, Spain, with both quarterfinals and semifinals happening there. I'm really excited for that. The Spanish League of Legends scene is one of the bigger small scenes out there. It's not on the level of LEC and LCS and LCK, but as far as like lower tier or double A scenes, I guess if you want to go with American sports comparison, it's right under those leagues. You have the Turkish League, the Japanese League, and then the Spanish League, I feel like, are right up there. The UK League, obviously growing as well. But I love seeing that go to one of these places where it's a very big academy scene for League of Legends and really bringing the pros right in there as well. And last but not least, as we said, we're going to have the finals in Paris, France at the Accor Hotels Arena. I don't remember what soccer team. I want to say it's a soccer team. It might have been an Olympic stadium. But that is a big stadium over there as well. I want to say it's not the biggest stadium we've ever seen league's finals in. I want to say it's like 20,000, if I remember correctly, maybe 25,000 at the most. So a bit smaller than usual. But then again, Paris obviously doesn't have the biggest stadiums either. They were able to lock this one down, and I'm pretty excited for it. I think Paris is going to be a fun city to have it in. Good security for events as well. They've been beefing that up in recent years, as well as just the appeal of Europe. Paris is a good location for a lot of those European countries to come to watch Fnatic win another world championship.
Another boy, season one was a long, long time ago, sir.
And that was before Korea was involved.
Exactly. So just real quick, that arena is actually an indoor arena. And it's kind of cool because the way that it's built, the walls on the outside are sloped and actually covered in grass. So it's kind of got that go green kind of vibe to it. They planted the grass out there on top of the building. So that's kind of cool. Some major things that have been held there, the Paris Masters ATP tennis tournament, kind of cool, and other major events like Joey's favorite sport of all time, extreme table tennis, handball, basketball, boxing, gymnastics, track cycling, and show jumping. Let me just find out. Yeah, show jumping is horses.
Horses. So is it not a soccer stadium then, I guess?
It is not a soccer stadium, no, sir.
Interesting. Okay.
And it will be a venue for the 2024 Summer Olympics.
Okay. Yes. Interessante. Yeah, I'm really curious with that. I'm surprised they didn't go with a soccer stadium, to be honest. Like something like a Paris Saint-Germain, I feel like would be even bigger. Maybe they just weren't able to lock it up at that time.
Oh, yeah. I'm shocked, too.
I guess soccer's in season.
Because looking at the capacity and concert configuration, which for most arenas in a center stage format, for an indoor venue, that's where you're going to get your maximum capacity, 20,300 people. So definitely on the smaller side here for your finals events. Like when we went to Korea, we're talking like an 80,000 person stadium. Here in Paris, we're dropping it all the way down to just over 20,000 people, potentially, based upon the stage format. Because it'll probably be a little bit larger than a concert stage for what League of Legends needs to do. So probably right around that 20,000 mark if I had to put my money on it for the finals coming up this year.
Yeah, and I think it makes sense to drop the size in comparison to Korea. Korea is a huge League of Legends country. So moving from South Korea to Paris, France, makes sense to drop it. I don't know if I drop it that much, though. If you're saying it was 80,000 then and we're dropping all the way to 20, 60,000 of a drop seems a little high for me. I think maybe 35, 40 would have been the way to go. But then again, with so fewer numbers, you can also jack those ticket prices up a lot as well. Moving from that to our recent results, John, we had the CSGO ESL Pro League Season 9 happen this past weekend. How did that go?
Team Liquid wins. Team Liquid has been an absolute terror in the CSGO scene. This is the first fully NA team to win the ESL Pro League. NA teams have done it before, but a lot of rosters that had international rosters on it. So this is your first NA roster, full NA roster to win an ESL Pro League title. And the other cool thing to take a look at here is Team Liquid has the chance to do something that only one other team has ever done in CSGO history, and that they are one win away from achieving the second Intel Grand Slam title. The Intel Grand Slam is awarded to the team that can win four S-tier events in ESL, IEM, and or DreamHack in those ecosystems for esports in a certain period of time. This is Team Liquid's third in less than a year. They have the chance to do something that only Team Astralis did back in 2017, and that is to lock in the Intel Grand Slam, which would award the team an extra cool, crisp $1 million. Spicy. I like it.
Yeah, I mean, that's not too shabby at all to end up winning that sucker. But yeah, Team Liquid definitely on the up and up as far as CSGO comes. I don't want to say they've been the most consistent team. I feel like Astralis definitely holds that title. Previous to that, Luminosity and SK definitely were one of the big contenders. But Team Liquid has definitely looked good recently. Obviously, this title is a huge one for them and for NA as well. And they've still shown that they are younger or on the younger side of teams. They still have room to grow and mature as well. So I don't think this team has hit its peak yet. Then over to Rocket League, the Season 7 World Championship happened this past weekend. We have Renault Vitality besting G2 Esports 4-1 to win the RLCS Season 7 World Championship. That Vitality roster is Fairy Peak, who a lot of you guys know. He's been on many teams. John and I saw him at the Season 4 World Championship competing for, I believe it was Mocket Gaming at the time. Then we had KDOP come in as well on this roster. KDOP, I believe he's a 2- or 3-time World Champion. He was with Team Dignitas, Gale Esports, I believe, or Gale Force Esports at one point. So he's been around. He's won a few world championships. Here's another one to his belt. And last but not least, we have 16-year-old Scrub Killa coming in, winning on this roster, as well as taking home the MVP. He went pro at 13, and he's currently the youngest RLCS player at the age of 16 as well. This team is very talented, John. You have a former world champion. You have a guy with really long hair that really just, he rocks it so well in Fairy Peak. And then you have Scrub Killa, one of the youngest, most talented RL pros out there. Really one of the youngest big pros we've seen since Bluey on PSG. So I'm excited that this roster has already won, and they're still so young, at least in certain positions. Fairy Peak definitely getting up there in age compared to our 16-year-old Scrub Killa here. But he's been around. They've all been around on different rosters. KDOP has really, I mean, he's got to have won 3 or 4 world championships with at least 2 or 3 different teams, or at least 3, I mean, because this will be his third. So he's been around for such a long time, and then Scrub Killa again, being such a young, talented pro. This, to me, just shows how much the RL scene is growing. My biggest complaint, and it will always be, I want to see a seasonal format where every team plays at least once a week. Hopefully one day we'll have that, maybe under Epic Games and Nate Nancer, we finally get something along that route.
So KDOP actually has the RLCS Season 4 title, the RLCS Season 5 title, the RLCS Season 6 title.
And 7.
I'm sorry, he did not get Season 6. That was Cloud 9. And he has Season 7. Now, in Europe, he's been absolutely crushing it on the European scene. That, I believe, he does have a total of, I believe, let me count real quick. Counting is difficult. 1, 2. It's 3 as well. But still, that's a really impressive career. Now, when you talk about Scrub Killa, the guy who goes pro at 13 is absolutely crushing it. In the 5th and final game of the grand finals for Series 7 here this past weekend, he had an absolute monster demolition that completely set up Fairy Peak for the aerial game-winning goal in Game 5 to seal the deal for Vitality. The way they have played Rocket League this season has been absolutely fantastic. Scrub Killa, you're going to be hearing that name a lot if you follow the Rocket League scene. This kid has been absolutely crushing it, and now he's a world champion at 16. I'm blanking on the name. There was the, I believe he was 15 at the time, the Dota 2 player that won. I am blanking on his name. Oh my gosh. Joey, do you know who I'm talking about at least?
I am not a huge Dota viewer. Was he on Team Liquid last year?
No. Oh, I'm going to mispronounce his name, so I'm going to post it in chat so everyone knows what in the world I'm trying to say. Sumali? Sumali?
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Oh, boy. So bad. For Evil Genius. He won at 16 also. So 16 is kind of like that peak age, I guess, if you will, in pro esports. He did it for Dota 2. And now Scrub Killa, which, by the way, is by far the best gamer tag ever. Thank you, Rocket League, for not making him change that name. That is a fantastic name. He's going to be around the pro scene forever for Rocket League, and I can't wait to see how his career grows from here on out.
Yeah, really talented. And again, that scene is up and coming. If I'm an esports org, this is a scene I'm definitely looking to buy into. If I'm a viewer, this is a scene I want to start finding a team and start following. There's just so many good things happening with this scene, and there's so much potential to see it continue to grow, as well as just its adaptability from esports to sports and the relatability between the two as well. Okay, John, with that, let's head on into the Overwatch League Week 4 preview. Is there a matchup that you're looking out for?
Oh, of course, I have to be watching my Washington Justice play. Still winless in this stage, but a lot of possibility coming up here in the next week here, week four, for stage three. But in all honesty, it's not really what I would consider the game of the week. I would have to... part of me wants to go with Spitfire versus Shock. Shock's still very impressive. Spitfire did sputter a bit against the Washington Justice last week, only winning the entire series 2-1. So Justice having a lot of ties against Spitfire. Again, the reigning league champions, still the London Spitfire, with a roster that is still incredibly strong, just kind of struggling in the current meta. That's one that stands out to me as well. Let me try to find another one here for you as well.
I got you, John. It's going to be the Los Angeles Gladiators and the Vancouver Titans. The Titans have shown they are vulnerable. They've shown it at the end of last stage in the playoffs, and they've shown it here so far to kick off stage three. So overall, they've shown blood. They're able to bleed. They're not the invulnerable team we saw in the early stages. The Gladiators as well, they started out a little slow, but they've started to make their way up. These are two top table teams, one a little farther up than the other. I think this really shows the gap between the top of the table and the bottom of at least the table that's going to advance into the playoffs.
Yeah, and really taking a look at those standings, it's a one-game separation from second place, which is currently held by the Vancouver Titans, and the LA Gladiators in that eighth spot. With a one-loss differential there, really. And only a map differential of four between those two. So two teams that know how to win maps, know how to go the distance in these series. So, Joey, I'll have to agree with you. I think the Titans versus the Gladiators might be your match of the week.
Yeah, it will be a spicy one. But we are going to take a slight hiatus from League of Legends, but we're going to talk about last week first, and then this upcoming week we do have some Rift Rivals action incoming. Kick us off with the LEC standings, John.
Let me pull those up real quick because I closed the wrong tab because I'm a moron. Let's see here. All right. Regular season standings for the LEC. Some team named Fnatic in first place, 6-0. No big deal there. Second place, G2 Esports, 5-1. Splice in third place, 4-2. We have a 1-2-3-way tie for fourth place with SK, Origin, and Schalke, or all even at 3-3. Seventh place, it's Europe, so you know what that means, another three-way tie. Rogue, Misfits, and Vitality all at 2-4, and Excel Esports being their best example of the anti-Fnatic, 0-6 in last place as well.
yeah, exciting stuff here overall. I think the big highlight from last week was Fnatic taking down G2. It was the battle of the two 5-0 Titans, the battle that we've seen really for the LEC, formerly LCS championship, because it's just been these two teams. It's just been back and forth between these two. Fnatic now retaking the crown, at least for now, sitting at 6-0, taking down the MSI champions and sitting on top of the throne of Europe, heading into Rift Rivals next week. Yeah, I guess we don't even need to cover matchups because we have a week in between.
Yep.
So from there, let's just slip on over to the LCS where we can hit those standings prior to Rift Rivals as well. No surprise, Team Liquid sitting in first, but there is a bit of a surprise with them having two losses. They're sitting at 6-2. Then we have a four-way tie for second, TSM, Cloud9, CounterLogic Gaming, and Optic Gaming sitting at 5-3 apiece. The Golden Guardians with some steam ahead, sitting in sixth currently, but at 4-4 alongside Clutch Gaming as well. In eighth, we have the 100 Thieves at 3-5, but do note the 100 Thieves are on a streak as well. They are on a 3-win streak. Then we have Echo Fox sitting at 2-6 in ninth place. Echo Fox looking, they're not looking too good. They had a decent spring. They're definitely not looking good for summer. And then FlyQuest currently at 1-7 sitting in 10th place. Any big matchups you want to hit on from this past week for these ones in the LCS?
You're going to make me open up another tab here? Hold on a second. Let's see. Last week, I mean, there were some great games last week, as always. You know, 100 Thieves taking a win over Cloud9. That was a little shocking there. 100 Thieves, again, kind of been underperforming as of lately. But, Joey, like you said, they're on that three-game win streak, so things are starting to click for that team. Cloud9 sputtering just a little bit. Blaber is essentially the jungler Cloud9 wants to go with. Unfortunately, he's been battling illness for the last couple of weeks, so Sven Skarren's been stepping in. Sven, a proven veteran in the really all of League of Legends, even the LEC and now the LCS, just isn't what Cloud9 needs at the moment. And it shows. Blaber does offer a lot of flexibility with his play style. Sven kind of is that old school traditional jungler that kind of favors that top lane matchup, which you can make an argument that the meta doesn't really support that too much right now. That we want the more aggressive jungler at the moment, which would be that would be Blaber in that sense. But Cloud9 looking to find ways around that. Cloud9 did pick up a win against CLG later on. Team Liquid going 2-0 last week as well. Equifax picking up their second win over Optic Gaming. That's a 2-6 Equifax now taking a win over, at the time, a 5-2 Optic Gaming. So that's a very strong win for Equifax as well. TSM rebounding as well after losing to Optic Gaming. That one a little bit of a closer matchup than the Equifax one, just position-wise in your standings. So a lot of good matchups last week. If you haven't had a chance to watch any of the VODs, definitely take some time, go through the VODs from last week. There were a lot of great games.
Sweet. Two other ones just to keep an eye on as far as teams go. Watch out for 100 Thieves. This is a team that is finally starting to click, a team chock full of talent that has not really been able to get anything done. They now have three wins under their belt, three consecutive wins. I think they're one to really watch out for. Hopefully they don't cool down going into Rift Rivals. Hopefully they can come out into the summer split after that little break in season, the international break, as we say in soccer. Hopefully they can bring it really back and keep that streak going. This 100 Thieves team has a lot of talent. They've just not been able to click it all together yet, and it looks like they're finally starting to do that. The other team, Golden Guardians. Yes, they went 0-2 this week, but look at who they played. They played probably the top two teams in NA. They played Team Liquid, and they played TSM. So really, we know Golden Guardians is not quite at the level of a Team Liquid or a TSM yet, but I also don't think they're the level of an 0-2 team. I think they just got screwed by the opponents they played this week. I actually think Golden Guardians is in a top three, top four spot right now, so really watch out for them and don't discount these two losses just because they're against two of the higher teams in the LCS. I almost said NA LCS again.
It's going to take forever to get that out of our heads.
It is.
Well, Nation, that will do it for another episode of the Level Up Podcast. But before you go, head on over to patreon.com/OTN and consider becoming a part of the Overtime Network. In return, you will get access to exclusive content that nobody else in the world can get, unless they are a part of the Overtime Network. If you enjoy listening to the Level Up Podcast, let us know. Leave us a review on iTunes and Google Play, or even shoot us a comment on SoundCloud. We would love to hear from you. In fact, we love to hear from all of our viewers so much, we have other ways for you to interact with us and the show. Joey, where else can Level Up Nation go to interact with us?
Level Up Nation, head on over to Instagram, Twitter, and or Facebook and find us at the Level Up Podcast. That is the LVLUP Podcast. You can also find us streaming regularly on Twitch. From games to this podcast Monday nights, we have a lot going on here at twitch.tv/OTN_live.
All right, make sure you tune in next week as we cover the latest and greatest in gaming and esports news. Do your ears a favor, hit that subscribe button to know when the next episode of the Level Up Podcast is ready for your listening pleasures. We will catch you all next week. Remember, be nice to your fellow gamers online, and as always,
level up.